Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
And it bears repeating, I know we mentioned this in the first hour of the program today, Diane Keaton, a legend in Hollywood, died over the weekend at the age of 79. Cause of death not immediately available. They were called to her home on a call for medical assistance on Saturday morning at Keaton's address. Paramedics transferred a person to the hospital. Law enforcement source confirmed that the person transported was indeed Diane Keaton. Okay. No relation to Michael Keaton, by the way. The story goes on to clarify.
Some people would ask that question.
Yeah. Why wouldn't you? Hmm. Maybe they're cousins. Could be brother and sister for all
I thought
know.
They were related, actually. I'm just being honest with you.
The young kids these days.
I know. I realized how old I was when I had so many friends texting me like, oh my gosh, you're on Dana and Parks today.
Your last name's Smith? Cool. Do you know Joe Smith?
Wait, are you related
to Joe Smith?
Rewind your tape real quick again, Rocco. What did you say? I want to hear the sentence exactly as you originally worded it.
I realized today my age when I got a whole bunch of texts that, hey, dude, you're producing the Dana and Park show today.
And what does your age have to do with
it? Yeah, Rocco, what is
it? Because when I was in college listening to you guys, none of my friends did. And now I have, like, bosses who are like, oh, my gosh, you're doing the show today, and, like, all types of stuff.
Well, your friends from college have finally grown up.
Yeah, they're finally on our
now, money. Now they're your bosses.
That's not what I said.
I can speak from experience. An appearance on this show could just make your career.
It must be.
Shut up.
Wow. Wow.
You are so full of crap.
It must be exciting for the younger set to discover this thing called radio.
Interactive radio.
Mm-hmm.
Where we don't just play music, we tell stories and
something.
How do I get the radio on my phone?
It's very simple.
I know. Download the Odyssey app.
That's
available
right.
Available at the App Store.
That's
blah,
right.
Blah, 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 blah.
Or you can go, now we're also on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. We're in the big time now.
I was hooking a receiver up to the in the living room, and one of the kids goes, what's tuner, Dad? What's a tuner?
Is that a joke?
It's not a joke. I go, it's how you most people forever listened to music.
Well, you know, but it's weird. My youngest daughter, who is turning 21 in a little over a week, we've already had that conversation. I'm serious.
I remember my first beer.
Okay, there have been...
Can't wait for it ever. First beer. It's going to be a big moment.
So there have been more than a handful of Office Space and original Vacation drops on the show today. Uh-huh. And I'm not even mad. I'm impressed. But I've caught them all.
That was actually a Beer Fest reference. Although well, I know summer Vacation, they share a beer together after the car accident. And Rusty just drains the beer. Mm-hmm. And Chevy Chase.
And then he hands it back to Chevy Chase and he just looks
at it. Griswold and goes, I remember my first beer with my dad. I was trying to do it in a German accent. I failed miserably. But in Beer Fest, as they're doing
now,
the
I
beer
have
truck,
not seen that movie.
Oh, man. It's the same guys who did Super Troopers. It's slapstick, ridiculous, but I love it. We used to watch it the night before we pull into port. We'd get all the guys together in my stateroom before we were going to, like, pour into, like, Singapore or whatever port we were going into, and we watch Beer Fest.
What does one do when you're in the Navy and you pull into port?
What does one do?
Yes.
What does one not do?
After you've been at sea for 90 days?
Do you stay on land or do you have to go back to the ship at night?
Depends. We would rent out like the suite.
A brothel?
No. We would find a 5-star hotel like a JW Marriott or something in whatever big city we're going to, and we would rent out the suite.
Yeah, these are pilots here. Yeah.
But there would be 30 of us.
Fancy.
And, you know, there's like four bedrooms and 30 people.
Them.
And yes. there's a lot of people sleeping on the floor and couches and random places.
Is it like Hangover 2 when they're in Bangkok?
It's kind of like that. You're sleeping in a bathtub. You walk into the bathroom. There's a guy with a pillow and a blanket in the bathtub.
And these are the people trusted with our national security.
Yeah, yeah. Work hard, play hard, baby.
Yep.
Work hard, play hard, baby.
let's put it this way: 6 days later, when the ship pulls out, you ain't well rested.
Really?
Yeah.
Now, who has to take care of? Who doesn't get the port call?
So,
who's the poor saps that have to guard the ship and make sure that everybody returning
that
to
is
the
a
ship?
Great question. I'm glad you asked. So,
is it people like Dan when they were in the service?
It's people like me.
I was not that much of a troublemaker.
Out of the certain number of days you're in port, you have to sign up for a certain number of watches. So you have a responsibility during the port call. At some point, you got to be on duty. So, like, I would do shore patrol. You could do a watch where you stayed on the ship and just sat in there and answered phones. I wanted to be out and about, so I always volunteered for shore patrol. So I'm walking around. We're wearing our cheesy little... It's not like the Steve McQueen, you know, Sand Pebble movie where you're walking around in your uniform with a billy club in your hand.
What is shore patrol?
You walk around and you make sure the sailors... Because there's 5,000 people that just poured into a foreign city, a foreign country. And inevitably, because they haven't had a beer in 90 days, they're going to go a little nuts. And so you're there to kind of like go, hey... Because you can recognize a sailor anywhere.
Oh, yeah.
Like, who's the guy?
Wait, hang on. Hang on, Jesse. What did that mean, Dan?
It's not hard to find them out.
You know, they look like sailors, American sailors, fresh off the boat, and they're probably drinking way too much, way too fast. So, yeah, you can pick them out.
Normally, citizens of the country you're in aren't sleeping on their own lawns passed out either.
Right.
Now, when you're a sailor and you're saying that there's 5,000 people on a ship, is that
on
right?
On an aircraft carrier, yeah.
On an aircraft carrier, okay.
Yeah.
Man, I can't even imagine.
A bit of an anomaly compared to other ships.
It's a small town floating on the water.
It's a city, yeah.
Yeah. And are you welcome? Like, if you pulled into Singapore, mm-hmm. are the Singaporeans excited to see you? Or are they like, oh...
They're excited for the business.
Okay.
When I did shore patrol in Singapore, I had to shadow a Singapore detective. So they took me to all the off-limits places. Because there's certain places that the Navy knows, hey, we don't want sailors going there because there's prostitution going on or maybe some drugs or whatever. Although Singapore, there's a lot of prostitution there, but there's no drugs or anything. It's a very actually clean
city. Because
you
can get the death penalty for that.
You can get in big trouble there. So I shadowed this. I go to the Singapore Police Department. And I'm waiting for this detective. And I'm thinking some guy's going to come out looking like Columbo in a trench coat. This young-looking kid comes out. He looks like he's Chinese, maybe. And he's got a polo shirt and khakis on. And he's like, hi, I'm Detective Chin or whatever. And I was like looking him up and down. I go, you're a detective? He looked like he was 22 years old.
Oh.
And we get in his little Toyota Prius, and we start driving to this place, and he puts on his iPod and hooks it up, and we're listening to Britney Spears in the car. And I'm thinking, this guy is a police detective. And so then we start to talk, and I say, what's the craziest case you've ever seen here in Singapore? And he goes, well, we had about 10 years ago, we had a murder here. It was a big deal.
A murder?
A murder. And he goes, one of my friends stumbled upon a cigarette smuggling scheme here in a warehouse once. And I go, what happened? He goes, well, they offered him like $10 million to walk away. And I go, did he take it? He goes, oh, no, the dishonor that would have brought on his family would have been too much to bear.
Well, the $10 million is going to go a long way when I get out of the country.
I don't know if it plays out nowadays like it used to, and it used to be shown in the movies and all that, when the ship pulls into port and the chaos and...
It's not like that.
Piracy
you're right, Dan.
Yeah. Ensues.
Piracy.
Piracy.
Now, I'll tell you, I did shore patrol in Dubai once, and that was a completely different deal.
Yeah.
What do you mean?
Well, I got accosted by the Russian mob there.
Oh.
That's a whole story in itself.
We're here to tell stories. I'm here to listen.
Oh, we got a commercial coming up?
Nope.
No, we're good. All right.
They're ready.
This is a good one.
How long is the story?
I can do it in like less than 5 minutes. 3 minutes.
Then wait.
Okay, I'll wait.
The night you got accosted by the Russian mob in Dubai?
Yes.
While on shore patrol?
While on shore patrol at a off-limits place that was run by the Russian mob.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Commander Jesse Reed is joining us, filling in today for Dana Wright. That guy over there is Rocco. That is Dan Weinbaum. My name is Scott Parks. here on KMBZ.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
It was late one night in Dubai.
Oh, thanks for reminding me.
It was a port call. And Commander Jesse Reed disembarks from his aircraft carrier only to be accosted by the Russian mob. You can pick up the story whenever you want.
Yeah, so they usually put you in pairs when you do shore patrol. So you got two-person integrity. You got a buddy backing you up. And on this particular night.
Are you armed?
No, that's what I was saying. It's not like in the movies. You're not carrying around a weapon or anything. You're actually, you're wearing khaki pants and a polo shirt that says USS, in our case, John C. Stennis, on a big yellow polo shirt that kind of just advertises to the world that you're.
Because nothing matches like yellow and khaki.
It's definitely, you're definitely meant to stand out.
Clearly.
Yes.
Did you get dressed in the dark?
No, that's the uniform you had to wear that the ship told you to wear when on shore patrol, at least when I was on that ship.
All right.
Anyway.
So you're on shore patrol.
So we're supposed to go to this place called the York Hotel. It's off limits to sailors because it's a known mob hangout run by the mob. There's prostitution, drugs. People have been killed there. There's a big nightclub in the up in the top floor of this place. And so the guy I was hanging out with was a buddy of mine in the air wing. He was in a different squadron. And we would actually jam together. He was a drummer, and I would play guitar and come over to his house, and we'd just whatever, play Foo Fighters, hang out and play. And his call sign was Tackleberry. Did you ever see the Police Academy movies?
Yes, of course.
Tackleberry?
The gun enthusiast?
He was kind of a weirdo,
yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So Tackleberry was kind of a weirdo. He was well-named, good call sign.
Okay.
And anyway, which I have another story about Tackleberry sometime, I'll share. I'll save, I can't use all my stories.
Don't burn all your stories in one day.
So we're on shore patrol together, and I'm sitting there, and I'm actually paying attention, doing my job. He's oblivious, eating McDonald's or something. And we get a phone call from our watch commander back at the ship. We had a cell phone they would give you that could kind of keep tabs on you. And he said, hey, we're getting reports from the people in the hotel that say you're harassing their customers that are walking into the hotel. And I said, sir, we're not doing that. We're just sitting on a park bench across the street making sure no sailors walk in. And he says, well, I'll tell you what, just to kind of like calm things down between us and the relationship between, you know, our ship and this hotel and all that, why don't you guys go in there? We've talked to the management and they'll allow you to stand watch, but you got to go in the hotel. Hmm. And I'm like, did I just hear this right? That seems counter to what we're trying to do here, but okay. So we go in, we walk in, it's dimly lit in the lobby. We walk in, it's a very nice, it's an older building, but it's very nice when you walk in. And there's like a velvet rope area off to the right as you walk in with like a restaurant area.
At no point are you thinking to yourself, I'm in the beginning of a really bad decision.
You're trusting in your leadership. Mm. It was a good lesson I learned as a lieutenant. Don't always just trust. Trust but verify. And we walk in, and over to the right is like a restaurant bar area, very nice, low lit, and there's a rope, like a velvet rope there, like nobody can go through there. And there's a big round table with guys in three-piece suits that look very Eastern European sitting around. And as we walk in the door, they all just do this thing where they like look over their shoulders and they're just staring at us. And I kind of got the heebie-jeebies a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And so we walk in and they go, okay, one of you guys can sit here in the lobby in a chair.
And this is management that's talking to you now,
yeah,
right?
This is like the person behind the desk. And one of you come upstairs to where our club is, and you can stand up there, and that way you can make sure none of your sailors from the ship are coming into the club area, which is the whole point of us being there in the first place. Keep sailors going from the club so they're not doing drugs and getting in trouble and stuff. Like, okay.
So Tackleberry goes, I'll sit down here. He pulls out his guitar magazine and headphones, and he's just sitting there in the chair. And I go upstairs, and next at the entrance to this club at the top of these stairs is a very muscular bouncer with a black t-shirt on and like military cargo pants. And basically for the next, I don't know, hour or so, this guy, very nice. Hey, shakes, you know, I forget what he told me his name is. And I'm trying to do all my best to just like answer his questions, but be very vague about my answers because that's what they teach
in
the military.
Was it Vladimir?
It wasn't Vladimir. In fact, I think this guy might not have been Russian. He might have been some other kind of Eastern European. But he basically tried to flex on me immediately, gave me like the I'm going to crush your hand when I shake your hand sort of thing. And so this guy, and I'm just standing there. I'm a foreigner in a foreign country. I'm a guest there. I'm not trying to ruffle any feathers. Don't want to start anything. I'm just there to make sure nobody walks in the door. And this guy.
Are you Top Gun at this point?
No.
This is before Top Gun.
I mean, I'm a fighter pilot at this point, but I'm not, haven't been through Top Gun. That doesn't matter in this story, though. You could have gone through Top Gun and this would have still been a very awkward situation. They don't teach you karate in Top Gun.
I understand, but you're more valuable to the military if you're Top Gun as opposed to, just a fighter pilot, but you get my point.
Yeah.
I mean, you've gone through some specialized training. You're now extremely valuable to the military.
So this guy begins to ask me questions like, oh, so tell me about all the ribbons on your chest and all that. Where did you earn them? Did you kill for those? And you know, he's asking, trying to intimidate me. He's like, I get no ribbons for men I killed. And I killed many men before. And I'm like, okay, wow, that's interesting. Okay, this is like, where's Tackleberry? I'm up here by myself. Need some mutual support. And so he continues to like intimidate me. And he's like, oh, what is your favorite, when you take man down, what is your favorite arm bar? How do you like to break arm? And I'm like, I don't know. Let me show you mine. And he immediately like grabs my hand and he like twists it behind my back. And I'm like, okay. Wow, that's good, man. Good job. And so I'm sitting here and I'm trying to like, how do I de-escalate this so I can still stand here and do my job, but also not let this guy like intimidate me. And then he goes, what is your favorite gun? And I go, I don't know.
Did he pull a gun out?
He pulls out. He like reaches. There's a painting behind him. He pulls the painting aside and there's a
do you think you're going to die?
A desert eagle. Do you know what a desert eagle is?
No, but I'm assuming it's a gun.
It's the largest handgun in the world. It shoots a 50 caliber bullet. Look at Dan just poked in his window. He goes, what? He heard me say Desert Eagle. It's a big weapon. And he pulls it out and he's kind of like tossing around in his hand and he's like pointing it.
At you?
Not at me, but like pointing it in a very like gunplay sort of fashion.
Do you think you're about to die?
But at this point, I thought that I've had enough. And so I said, hey, where's your restroom? And I basically ran downstairs. Tackleberry, just completely oblivious to what's going on up there. He's sitting there with his headphones on, reading a magazine. I said, dude, we're getting the out of here. And then I got on my cell phone after I got out of the hotel because there was no coverage in there. And I mean, I called up this guy was a commander. I was a lieutenant at the time, the watch guy. I called him up and I just absolutely yelled at him. I said, what are you doing putting us in there? That guy was waving a gun in my face.
He's a higher ranking officer.
Yeah, he was in charge of the whole watch detail. And so I think he got in a little bit of trouble for that after we pulled back out and they did a whole investigation and everything. But
wow.
Yeah. Yeah. That was not fun.
I'm glad you got out of there alive.
I realized this is how people disappear right here. And I thought I was going to get out. I was like, I'm going to get out of here before they make me disappear.
And like end up in separate duffel bags with one arm in one and one arm in another.
Yep.
At the bottom of the ocean.
Yeah.
Wow. It's a hell of a story, man.
Yeah, thanks. You live and learn.
Yeah, no kidding. Don't go into this, what was it called? The York?
The York Hotel.
Nice.
I almost feel weird saying it out loud. I'm like, I hope there's no ties to that hotel here in this country.
In Dubai?
No, I mean, I don't know. I don't know the Russian mob's influence in the United States.
Well, let's just pretend we didn't hear that story. 913-586-7798. Commander Jesse Reed filling in today for Dana Wright. My name is Scott Parks here on KMBZ. The greatest Beatles song of all time, without question.
And I asked you your criteria, and you said, because I like it.
Well, no, you said, what is your criteria? I said, if I like it.
Oh, okay.
And I think this is their best song.
Okay.
And I remember seeing Paul McCartney about a decade ago at Sprint, T-Mobile, and I screamed at our then producer, Rod Babcock, who was with me. I said, I can't believe we're in the same room as a Beatle. That was pretty awesome.
What is it about that song that really captures you?
I don't know. It's just catchy as hell.
I mean,
just like You know, what's your favorite song?
By the Beatles?
By anybody.
Oh, man. I think Since I've Been Loving You by Led Zeppelin.
And what is it about that song?
It is an emotional song. You feel the emotion of the story that is told in there, and you feel it through the instruments. And Robert Plant's amazing voice, which is an instrument in and of itself.
Okay. Yeah. Most people would not disagree with you on that one.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Let's go to Phil on line one. Phil, good afternoon. Hello.
Hey, Scott. Love your show.
It's yours, man.
I try to listen. I try to listen every day.
Thanks a lot.
Currently a furloughed federal employee, but we'll talk about that differently.
Okay. I'm sorry to hear that, man. I really am.
Likewise.
Commander, thank you for your service.
Oh, my pleasure. Thank you.
Happy birthday to our glorious Navy. I do recall both Singapore, Dubai, what was the other one? Jebel Ali?
Yep.
If I remember correct.
Yeah. Were you on the Stennis?
No, I was actually on the Carl Vinson.
Okay.
And so we visited the same spot, and I remember that they would set up entire, like, small villages on the pier for us to buy beverages of whatever kind. We'll keep it clean for Scott Parks, you know.
What I'm guessing in Jebel Ali, you're talking about the sandbox where you pull in there and they have that whole little city there where they're selling you rugs and shawarma.
Yeah, exactly.
What year is this?
This is 94. Okay. 94, I pulled in there with Carl Vinson. 95, I pulled in there with John Paul Jones.
Okay.
The father of the U.S. Navy.
Yes, not the bass player for Led Zeppelin.
No, not the bass player from Led Zeppelin.
not the bass player from Led Zeppelin.
Although he was named after John Paul Jones, the sailor.
Is that true? Exactly.
That is absolutely true.
That is very true.
All right. Well, hey, Phil, thank you for your service, man. Really appreciate it. This story here from NBC Sports, after an avalanche of reports regarding dysfunction within the North Carolina football program, culminating in a report of buyout negotiations, Bill Belichick met with reporters earlier today. He opened his media session by calling the reports, quote, categorically false. Asked about the statement that was posted on Wednesday night regarding his commitment to the program, Belichick said that it was just for clarification because some things reported were factually totally inaccurate. Later in the press conference today, Belichick criticized the negative reports based on anonymous sources as, quote, not credible.
Mm-hmm.
Adding that some stories were deleted 2 days after they were posted, NBC writes, we're not aware of any of the North Carolina reports from last week being deleted. Probably because they weren't.
No matter what, I think his legacy is not going to be one of the winningest Super Bowl coaches in history.
You know, and here's what I've never understood. He's, what, 73, 74 years old. Why not just walk away? Just say, you know what?
Go live life with your young...
With your 24-year-old super... smoking hot girlfriend who's only attracted to you because of your eyes and smile, and just get on with life.
Yeah.
I mean, when I'm 74 years old, I literally love what I do for a living. I couldn't and wouldn't want to do anything else. But I hope when I'm 74, I'm not sitting here with a rather raspy, hoarse voice because Dana got me sick last week trying to do a radio program. You know, at 74, I want to babysit my grandkids.
Well, and if you still want some work and you want to stay busy, just do like Peyton Manning or Nick Saban. Go do some insurance commercials and be funny.
Yeah. I mean,
I think if he was show his funny side in a commercial, that'd be really funny. Because Nick Saban,
Bill Belichick. Does he have a funny
side?
Well,
everyone thought Nick Saban didn't have a funny side. And then he's been in some commercials and he's got some endorsements and he's actually a funny guy. Making fun of himself a little bit.
Well, if you have to, it has to be self-deprecating humor.
And then Peyton Manning's hilarious. He's a funny guy.
I always thought Peyton Manning was sort of funny.
His commercials are hilarious.
Well, the ones he does with his brother are the best.
Oh,
when
yeah.
they're behind their dad walking down the hallway
kicking
at
each
ESPN,
other,
yeah. Yeah, spitballing and you know.
Giving him a noogie.
Yeah, I mean those are funny. Those are funny.
Yeah,
but you're right. I mean, the one. when I'm 74, God forbid, you would be what, in your mid 60s? If we're still sitting around here doing this, I did not financially plan properly.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and again, not to repeat myself, but I will for just a second. It's not that I don't love what I do. I do. This is all, I'm petrified the day when this radio station wakes up and lets me go.
Mm-hmm.
Because I, honest to God, I said this to, I think my brother or my girlfriend the other day. I honestly don't know how to do anything else. I don't. I used to be able to drive a moving van. I was 22.
You can put on some Kiss makeup pretty.
No, those days are over. Those days are over, Jesse. And they're not coming back anytime soon. They're not, and I don't want them to. You know, they were fun while they lasted.
Yep.
Local congregants gathered over the weekend to grieve. It is now 16 people that died in that munitions explosion in Tennessee. It was a really small town. The company was called Accurate Energetic Systems. They had a very large campus, tons of acreage, where they had they kept the buildings purposefully separated. God forbid there was an explosion. There was clearly a massive explosion in one of the buildings. They originally thought that 19 people had been killed. It was 16, still too many, mm-hmm. obviously. One's too many. The blast was felt 20 miles away.
Mm.
Wow. The town, I believe we looked it up, it's a small town in McEwen, Tennessee, and has less than 1,000 people in it. So basically, everybody works at the munitions.
Did the article say how powerful that explosion was? Did it have just a that measurement?
Just that it was felt 20 miles away.
Yeah.
I don't know if you saw the video of the building. It's gone.
No.
It's gone.
Yeah.
It's completely gone. Mm. Authorities were combing through the wreckage of the destroyed facility, which was reduced to scorched metal and burnt out vehicles.
Kind of seems like a miracle that it was only 16 people.
Well, it happened at like 8 o'clock in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I don't know if that means that, you know, only 16 people worked in the building, or if that says to me, or what do I know, but that not everybody had gotten to work.
Yeah.
It was 8 o'clock in the morning. Maybe everybody's supposed to be there at 8:30, 9 o'clock. I have no idea. I have no idea. But, you know, 16 is still way too many, but it's not. How do I say this without sounding coy? It's not as bad as they thought it was going to be, which I guess in and of itself is not terrible. No, it is terrible. Let's move on to something. I don't want to talk about death anymore. story here from Fox News. There is a guy by the name of Paul Burrell who has written a new book called The Royal Insider. Now, he was a butler at both Buckingham Palace and Kensington Palace in the 90s, it sounds like. And apparently, the royal family was not, at least back then, immune to stiff drink. Speaking of port calls. He was Princess Diana's former butler at Buckingham Palace. He called it the Gin Palace, where drinks never stopped flowing. Gallons of gin were consumed by the royal family every single week. Quote, I quickly became familiar with the ingenious ways in which the household smuggled booze around the building. I would be ordered by senior members of staff to empty a screw-top tonic water bottle each night, fill it with gin so that they could use it for their parties in their rooms. Footmen, I don't know what that means, could be seen carrying Russell Hobbs electric kettles around the palace, not full of water, filled with gin. Apparently, the Queen Mother, Queen Elizabeth's mom, enjoyed a tipple. She enjoyed ceaseless social rounds and reportedly a gin and Dubonnet at noon, red wine at lunch, a martini in the evening, and champagne after dinner. Queen Elizabeth was also known to like the gin. Princess Margaret was fond of famous grouse whiskey, and Princess Catherine always enjoyed her gin and her tonic.
Hmm.
This family likes its gin. Not that there's anything wrong with that.
I'm not super shocked.
I think it would get boring being in that family.
I mean, I guess it's better than snorting lines of coke.
Off a stripper?
Off a footman?
913-586-7798.
Bentley, get in here immediately.
913-586-7798. Hey, don't forget, if you miss a segment, be sure to check out the Dana and Parks podcast. You can follow us on Apple Podcasts, on Spotify, or wherever you get your podcast.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Tron Ares powered up the box office over the weekend, bringing in $33.5 million. It was under projections because the movie cost $150 million and comes 15 years after Tron Legacy. And one of my favorite movies of the year, The Smashing Machine with Dwayne The Rock Johnson, which opened last week with $6 million, and I was a couple of those $6 million, only made 1.7 over the weekend and has already dropped to eighth place. It's a great movie. I don't know if they didn't do the promos right. They didn't promote it properly. I don't know what it is. Hmm. It's a great movie.
Okay.
But it is going to, it's not going to make $10 million.
Hmm.
So, you wanted to give a shout out?
I got to give a shout out. Yeah. Yeah. Before we run out of time here, I was at my daughter's high school play this Saturday, which was just awesome, by the way. It's the first high school show I've seen since I was in high school. And it's at the high school I went to high school with. So I'm sitting in the crowd.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah. So it's kind of cool to see your kids going to the same school that you used to go to. And afterwards, you know, the cast members are all floating around and we give Ainsley flowers and take pictures. And I turn around and I see my old yearbook teacher from high school is there. His granddaughter was in the show.
Really?
And yeah, Kevin Mays. And he says, "Hey, I hear you on the radio. I love that show. I listen to it every day."
Oh.
And I said, "Well, I'm going to go on Monday and I'm going to mention that I ran into you." So, a loyal listener there. Well, Kevin Mays.
Thank you, Kevin.
And we used to eat breakfast. We used to always meet for breakfast when I'd come back into town. Do you remember in a restaurant called the Machine Shed? Does that sound
familiar? Rings a bell. Yeah. Yeah.
You would go in there and if you ordered breakfast and if you said "I love eggs" to the server, they'd give you an extra egg. It's probably why they're not in business anymore.
Right. Not the greatest business.
So, Kevin,
plan.
If you're listening, I don't have your phone number. You got to look me up on Facebook or something, and we'll go grab breakfast at a place that probably doesn't offer free eggs. But
story here from the New York Post. An investment expert is urging cash-strapped Americans to check their basements and junk drawers to see whether they own forgotten books, gadgets, and games that are now worth a fortune.
Mm.
Quoting here from Adam Kaprucki, who is founder of Real World Investor, "Most people throw away items that could pay for their retirement in just a few years. The truth is there are certain everyday objects sitting in your home that are worth more than your stock portfolio by 2030. Among them, the first generation iPhone, released in 2007, which sold for $499 new, but if it's sealed, it now fetches $20,000 at auction with mint condition models, surpassing $50,000 for an iPhone 1.
Who's going to buy an iPhone and have the wherewithal to keep it sealed and just preserve it for 20 years?
The same people who bought Chewbacca Star Wars action figures in 1977 and for whatever reason never, ever opened up the box. I was too busy playing with mine. A super rare 4GB iPhone 1, also manufactured in 2007, just sold at auction for $190,372. Nostalgia sells like sex.
I was really hoping you were going to say something like Chutes and Ladders or Twister would pull like $1 million, but I guess I'm out of luck.
See, but here's the deal. The guy goes on to say, most people don't realize that the Star Wars action figures they played with as kids or the Pokemon cards they collected can now fund a house deposit. That's true if you didn't open up the Star Wars action figure.
That's the problem there.
I still have a handful.
Yeah. I mean, who doesn't want to play with Chewbacca?
I have a mint condition R2. I'm sorry? Sorry. I don't speak French. I have a mint condition R2-D2 from 1980. If I took it down to like Brothers Music, because they sell that vintage stuff, I might get like $10.
Is it full size?
No, it's like...
Oh, okay. I was thinking it was like the size of the actual set.
No. We got to run. Hey, always great to see you, buddy.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Really do appreciate having you in town. Jerry Rice is 63 today. Kate Walsh is 58. Paul Simon is 84. Oof. Marie Osmond is 66. Nancy Kerrigan.
Why?
Is 56. Sammy Hagar, one of the greats, is 78. And Tiffany Trump is 32. We got to run. On behalf of our producer today, Rocco, my good friend and co-host, Commander Jesse Reed, my name is Scott Parks, and God willing, we'll see you tomorrow at 2 o'clock. Be safe, be well, and be good to one another. Good night.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.